Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to Wellness and Dentistry. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Kyle Stanley. I'm a dentist, a tech entrepreneur, a speaker, and a researcher. And I am joined with my great friend, Dr. Martin Mendelson. He is a disabled dentist, an amazing coach, a speaker, and a thought leader. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry around the world. And if you've been listening to our podcast multiple times, make sure to share this with a colleague who could use some of these teachings. Maybe we can reduce their stress, make their practice a little bit better. That's the only thing we ask from you guys. Before we get started, too, make sure to join us November. We're going to have a 2-day workshop that we call Lightside Live, where we go deep into practice management, reducing stress in your practice, physical health, all kinds of stuff that we talk about on this podcast. But today we're going to talk about setting goals for sustainable success in dentistry. This is so important because many times we see dentists burn out. They don't have sustainable careers. And if you're planning on doing this for, like, as long as my dad did it for 46 years, you have to do it sustainably. So, Martin, welcome. How are you doing?
I am good. I'm good. I love this topic so much because it always comes up in my coaching sessions, a lot of times in workshops. It's a really, really good one. It's probably one of those topics not a lot of people talk about. When we get into details, I think people will understand why I say that. So,
Yeah. And when I talk about sustainable success,
yeah.
to me, this means being able to do something for a long time, not getting burnt out. You see a lot of dentists that are quote unquote successful, meaning they have money, they have prestige, their clinical practice is good. However, their physical health is poor. They've been divorced. They have no relationship with their kids. They have no friends. They have no hobbies. And that's not success to me. I think that used to be success to me, being rich and, having a great practice and being well known. That was all I wanted, right? But then I think once you mature a little bit, especially if you go through burnout, like you and I both did, or depression or anxiety or overwhelm, you start to realize what is important. And to me, this idea of sustainable success, why it's so challenging for dentists, because we're so used to grinding. So I've talked about this before on the podcast, but you have to grind in high school to get into college. You have to grind in college when everyone else is out partying, you're at the library studying because you're doing biochemistry and, biology and pre-med stuff. In dental school, you've got to grind. You're there every day, sometimes 6, 7 days a week. Sometimes you're doing night clinics. Sometimes you're there on the weekends doing wax ups and setting up denture teeth. And then once you get out of dental school, you've got to grind to work 2 days here, 4 days at this city where you've got to drive 2 hours because you need the money. You need to pay off your loans. You need to learn more. And we just never stop grinding. And that is not sustainable. That was what I did, basically. And that was what many of, my colleagues have done, our colleagues have done, and it doesn't leave them in a great place.
No, it doesn't. And part of the challenge is how to deal with and navigate the largesse of everything that you need to do in life. So if you haven't listened to our last episode, we went in depth and we talked about the Eisenhower Matrix and how to kind of organize yourself differently. What we're really talking about here is how to engage things for the long haul, almost like the mindset around sustainable success and even setting goals. Because you talked about grinding, and I couldn't have put it better myself, and a zillion percent true. And therefore, we look at finishing things as a sign of accomplishment, right?
Yes.
And so anything that ends up being ongoing kind of creates a glitch in the matrix kind of thing. And for whatever reason, I've noticed with many of my clients and many of my friends, so let me make this statement as a question, not to you, Kyle, but to the listeners. What's your desk look like? So many of them, it's just overflowing with all this stuff. Why? Because they feel like they never have the time to actually jump in and clean it off. And so sustainable success and sustainable momentum is as much about releasing the judgment of I got to complete this versus the mindset of I made a little progress today. That's great, because there's a huge difference.
I love that. And that is so true. I mean, that is so my personality. I love checking things off of the checklist.
Yep.
If it's still on the checklist and I'm still doing it, I'm like, I want to get that done, right? And I think a lot of that comes from dental training.
Oh, 100%.
You know, you have to do this many surfaces to graduate. Mm-hmm. You get checked off once the caries is completely removed. You get checked off once the margin is this, or if the bone is at this height, whatever. Because I really love when you think of like a big decayed tooth. I think the dentists that are listening will get this, right? You've got this big decayed tooth. Maybe there's an old amalgam and there's decay around it. Part of it's fractured. And you go in and then you clean it out and, you know, the amalgam pops off right into the suction. We all love that when it goes right into the suction. And then you're cleaning, you're circumscribing the caries, and then you get down to sound dentin and how nice that is. And then you get to the center and maybe you're using a little spoon or maybe you're air braiding and you finally clean it out. And it's like, oh, man, what a great feeling.
Yeah.
It's like you checked that box off.
Yes. Okay? Yeah.
The dentin, you know, the tooth is clean. Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, next one, we're going to seal the dentin. Da, 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 and then you check that off.
Yep.
And then you do the composite or take an impression for a final restoration. But we love recipes. We love checklists. And I think the hard part with self-improvement is that many things we do take a long time.
Yes. And here's the other kicker, which we didn't talk about last episode, so I'm glad we're getting here now. Things take multiple steps. And so when you look at something that's ongoing as a singular task on a list, good luck with that. So David Allen wrote a book called Getting Things Done. There's a couple of philosophies in there that I love. I've been following the philosophies. I'm not going to sit here and say 100%. I would say 80% for over a decade, and it's completely changed my life. One of the big constructs or philosophies is the idea that, you know, that to-do list that you have, right? That you got to get done today or this week. The items on that checklist have to be actionable next steps. So let me give a great example for dentistry. You're looking to hire a new hygienist. What should not be on your list is hire hygienist. What needs to be on your list is write job description, post to Indeed, post to Facebook, call my specialist buddy if they know anybody. You get the idea? So there's a twofold level of importance here. There's literal and psychological. The literal is you're getting a next important step completed toward the end goal. And psychologically, you feel like you're getting somewhere. Because if you just put hire hygienist and you do create the job description, call your specialist, post to Indeed, which are all really important, great steps, but you can't check it off because you haven't hired them yet, you feel frustrated, right?
Yeah, so this is
fantastic.
My personality. If I do something and it wasn't on my checklist, I'll put it on my checklist.
Me too.
Just so I can check it off.
Yeah. And I try to get as good as I can. Like next week, as we record this, I have an opportunity to speak in front of this group. And so because of that, I need to prepare. I need to print off my speaker packet and I need to actually create two additional pages relative to my coaching and my team stuff. So all of those things are separate items on my list. Because if I just say prepare for the meeting, well, that doesn't capture it, right?
That's true.
And, you know, I can feel some of our friends and colleagues out there going, well, isn't that a little overkill? Well, if you're frustrated, how's that working for you, right? And so a couple extra seconds to categorize things and look at a checklist as a next actionable step versus a project, as David Allen would call it, can really change things dramatically for your productivity and, frankly, your psychological well-being to getting things done.
Yeah, and this idea came to us to talk about this today because we're about halfway through this year.
Yep. Amen.
And, you know, a lot of people set goals at the beginning of a year. They want to be, let's say they want to lose weight, or they want to get production up in their practice, or they want to take this much time off, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Maybe they want to clean their desk or something like this.
Yeah.
And we were reminded that, wow, we're halfway through this. How yeah. are you doing on your goals? If you set goals at the beginning of the year, which
right.
few people do. Many people may know, if you listen to previous podcasts, that I am pretty serious about writing myself a letter at the end of every year, recounting the year and setting goals for the next year. And I haven't hit some of my financial goals yet, but I have already hit my physical goals. I hit those in about 4 months, which is kind of exciting.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I wanted to gain a certain amount of weight and did that in about 4 months. So I was very happy with that, regimented with my diet and exercising and going to the gym and that kind of stuff. I still have 6 months to hit some of my other goals,
yeah.
my personal goals, some of my financial goals. But the important thing that you said when we were talking previously is one is greater than zero.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So expand on that a little bit.
So I call it also compound time. I mean, look, and this is also addressed in the book, The Miracle Morning, too, which I like. Sleep is incredibly important. So I kind of have a challenge a little bit with that book. So it's like, as long as you're going to bed earlier, I'm okay with getting up earlier.
Yes.
But anyway, the idea is to release the judgment of, I have to spend X amount of time on a given task in order to get it done. So an example I typically use is going to the gym. You just talked about going to the gym. So a lot of people think that if they don't physically go and spend, let's just say an hour, just as an even amount, that's not worth it. That's not good enough. But the truth of the matter is that if you spend 10 minutes a day doing sit-ups or calisthenics, whatever, chair yoga, by the end of the week, you've spent the hour. And so you can expand this to a whole bunch of different things. I want to read more. I think it's obvious I like to read. You want to read more. I don't read. The only time I read for any longer than 15 minutes is on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
All my reading is done in 10 to 15 minute chunks.
Yeah.
In the morning or the evening, depending on what I have going on. That's it. So it's the idea that doing something is better than doing nothing. And if we're consistent, we start talking about sustainable success. If we're consistent, then that compounded time keeps adding up and adding up and adding up. And it's like the iceberg illusion, where all people see above is like, you know, the success and the accomplishment. You don't see all the failure and the hard work that goes below it. It's the same thing. So one is greater than zero as a concept, all about being sustainable, even if it's small chunks, to keep your momentum and success moving forward. That's it.
I like that idea of compound time. It, of course, mm-hmm. makes me think of compound interest.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's the same idea with compound interest, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you invest $1,000 a year, but you started when you were 20,
right,
and that is going to be way more than if you invested more now.
Right.
You know,
right.
$2,000 a year now because mm-hmm. of this idea of compound interest. I really like that. I think another way to put it for us dental folk is that don't wait until something's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is something that I see a lot of dentists struggle with on presentations,
yep.
on, you know, I'm not going to post it unless it's perfect, on their website, or I don't want to get the website up unless it's perfect, little things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this when I first started Lightside Academy.
I was just thinking that.
Yep. Yeah, I put it up. I didn't want to put it up until it was recorded really nicely, and you know, I had all of my downloads looked perfect and all this stuff. And I remember talking with someone who did a lot of online courses, and they said, just put it up. You'll find what you need to make better and what you don't, and what matters and what doesn't matter, but you're going to learn from that. And the very first time we did it was during the pandemic. I forget, we had 20 or 30 dentists from around the world join, and it changed people's lives. People were telling me, I saved their life. I changed the trajectory of their profession, how they think about it, their mindset. And I was thinking, well, the videos weren't perfect, and the downloads didn't look great, and I didn't have all my references in place. And over time, now I've been doing it for 4 years, it's gotten a lot better.
Well, not only that, you gave me the same advice like 2 weeks ago, because I'm about to release my course on September 1st is my due date. And I was talking to you about videography and everything, and you said, Martin, just do it at your desk. Like, it's going to be right here. And there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. And so there's a really good book, by the way, by one of my mentors, the gentleman who started the happiness course that I have a certification in, Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar, wrote a book called The Pursuit of Perfect. And it's a really, really good book that speaks to this, because if you're waiting until things are going to be perfect, to paraphrase what you just shared, it's never going to happen, right? And so I think there's a difference between being wrong and not being perfect. And I think we as dentists, because of our training, can join the two. It's if it's, one of your favorite things to talk about, if it's not a success, it's a failure. Is it really?
You're exactly right. It come that we've learned that in dentistry. We've learned that, on the test, your margin is supposed to be 0.3 millimeters above the gingiva. Yours is 0.2, and so you fail that the margin
Bingo.
section of the course, right? And so you think, well, it wasn't perfect, so it's a failure. And we have to remember that our pursuit in dentistry should be for excellence and for mastery, not for perfection, because it never exists. And I've talked about this before, but in the Olympic diving, how they rate somebody is you can get a 10 and not do a perfect dive. That dive was the highest level that a human can pursue. It doesn't mean there's no splash. It means there's a small splash. It means you mastered that dive. It was an excellent dive. And when you change that mindset, it allows you to have some bumps in the road. It allows you to do something that is not always perfect. And in dentistry, we need to give ourselves a little bit of grace. And that comes in our clinical ability, that comes in our leadership, that comes with, our work-life balance, that comes with our presence, everything involved in dentistry. But it even comes with this idea of setting goals and having sustainable success. So set your goal, because we know that people that write down goals are 60% more likely,
It's
40%.
interesting. So it's about
Someone will
forty.
illustrate this one.
If you write it down, you're about 46% more likely to achieve it. If you have social accountability, so if you're part of a study club, if you're part of Lightside or whatever group that supports you, you're upwards of 65%, because people are like, that, way to go. And interestingly enough, if you take those two things and then set a deadline, you're upwards of 95% of the likelihood. And this is based on actual research out of California. I think it was Dominion University. And I've noticed that in myself. Like, I just mentioned the course that I'm doing. I mean, I've got you
Yeah,
cheering
you
me
told me
on.
September 1st.
And I've got a friend who believes in me so much, she already paid for the course. So that's the deadline. So every time I sit down at my desk, I'm like, I got to get this done, because people are counting on me. I have a deadline and I have people cheering for me. So it's critically important to do so. And I think that particularly the associates that are listening and or the solo owners, dentistry is very isolating, and you feel like you can't talk about whatever things with other people. If you're an associate, you feel like you can't talk about it with the owner if you're feeling overwhelmed or looking to achieve a certain goal. And the truth of the matter is, in many ways, that social support and social accountability is very much the opposite. Like, it's what we need to be doing, not what we don't need to be doing.
So, what are some goals that dentists, dental professionals can give themselves to try to achieve that will help in their wellness?
I think the first thing, which is somewhat related to our last episode, is thinking about the time that you have available to yourself. And I'm talking about personal time. And I've worked through this with quite a number of clients that are parents of younger children. And the conversation typically goes something like this. Well, you're in that boat too. The conversation typically goes something like this. Well, I don't have any time. Great. Okay. So can we please talk about how you've spent your time in the last week? And so we literally either depends on the client, depends on the conversation, either in detail or generalities, talk about how they spent their out of practice time. Typically, we find some time within the largesse of 7 days. And this is when the compound time thing starts coming in because we're like, we don't have any time to do XYZ. Really? Well, we have 10 minutes, 3 days a week. That's a half an hour every week. And so it ends up becoming this conversation around available time. So again, look at your out of practice time. Think about how you're spending your time currently and release yourself from the judgment that I don't have enough time. Well, who defined enough? Where'd that come from? Right? I'm looking at my phone on purpose because I'm 456 days in to a streak of studying Spanish on Duolingo. 456 days.
Muy bien.
Thank you.
Espérense, gracias. Come
I
on.
know, I know, I know. But the point is that I do it in 10-minute chunks, right? So, and I should have said gracias, so gracias.
Well, it's exactly that. If you think 10 minutes is enough, but when you do it 400 and however many times,
Yeah.
how many hours does that equal?
Correct.
But if you
Correct.
told yourself, over the next year and a half, I'm going to do whatever, however many hours that equals
Yeah.
that, you'd be like, no way,
It's
that's
correct.
possible.
Yeah. It's similar to the practice as well, where people say I really can't take any time off. Well, why? Because I need to be in the practice. Now, granted, if you're a solo practitioner and you need coverage, there are exceptions to what I'm about to say. However, if you work 4 days a week, and you feel like you can't take any time off, if you decided that you wanted to, take a week off every month, well, you could theoretically work 5 days a week for 4 weeks in a row and then take that fifth week off, right? Not that I'm proposing we work 5 days a week, but the point is that math is just math. Time is just time. Production is just production. So it's just a matter of how you skin the cat, as the phrase goes, and how you're looking at the opportunities you have in front of you without the judgment, right?
I'm thinking of the dentists that are setting goals from either a financial standpoint or from that time standpoint. I'm taking 1 week off a year, and I would love to do a 2 week vacation with my family in the summer when, my kids are off of school. And it really is just looking backwards. It's saying, what did we produce last year? Oh, okay, we produced 1 million. We produced 500,000, whatever it was. Okay, what is my overhead? What is my daily production? How many days did I work? What does that equal out? What is my average hours per day? Okay, so what is my average production per hour? And if you have all those numbers, you can predict, can I take 2 weeks off? If I'm working 4 days a week, oh, well, no, maybe I have to work longer. Maybe I have to increase my production per hour. Maybe I have to add a hygienist, or maybe I have to start, doing aligners, or maybe I need to take something on restoring implants better and get to that point.
And I'll go one deeper than that as well, which is one of my favorite things to talk about, which is once you figure that out, that's really important. And that will be a guidepost. And that can actually truly change your quality of life. And if we then take the next level down, which is great. So let's look at case acceptance. Let's look at case acceptance per procedure. Let's look at acceptance per treatment plan total dollar value. Where do we see the patterns? Where do we see the drops? And if there's multiple doctors in the practice, then what are the differences? So if your colleague, whether it's your business partner or other associate, whatever, has a 10-point increase or they're 10 points ahead percentage-wise of you for implant crowns, well, what are they doing? What are they saying? How are they going about this? Like, there's opportunities to learn and improve, whether it's from each other within a given practice, taking a course at, you know, Spear or Coyce or Dawson or Panky, whatever, to increase your skills to then therefore hit those goals.
And how do you recommend looking at case acceptance numbers?
So I like to look at it first. I like to start broadly and then go slowly down into the details, right? So I would look at just, you know, crown and bridge in total. Then you would look at, you know, singles versus multiples. You would look at implant retained versus tooth retained, those kind of things. Like, you start to bucket it into
categories. I guess what my question was what are the two things you're looking at to get that percentage? You're looking at what was treatment planned versus what was completed, or what was treatment planned versus scheduled?
Right.
What specifically?
That gets really, really in the weeds very quickly. But yeah, it's the way I like to look at it is what's treatment plan versus what's accepted and scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have to say yes before they schedule it, but you got to have both in order for the clinical procedure to complete and the numbers to hit the books. So that's how I choose to skin the cat. Now, there are those individuals that look at it based on yes or no versus dollars. And I don't think it's necessary, particularly when you're first starting into this evaluative process. I think it's first on what was presented, what was accepted, and then therefore scheduled, period.
I'm looking something up right now on the practice management system that we use. But what's great about the digital world that we're in, being in dentistry in the 2020s, let's say, is that we have everything digitized. We have every little bit of data that we need to set goals, to evaluate goals, to get down to the nitty-gritty. When you think of in the 70s or 80s, if my dad was looking at case acceptance, it would be very challenging to do this.
You would literally
have to do it by hand.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm so baffled when you and I are talking to dentists that we coach or work with, and we ask them fairly basic numbers that they don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like,
what was your production this month? What was your production last year? What was your case acceptance? What is your average daily production? What is your overhead? I mean, if you don't know your overhead and you run a business.
Yep. Yeah, 100%.
You need to change.
100%.
You know, we can't keep putting our head in the sand and saying, well, I'm not going to focus on business because business is selling and selling is dirty and I'm a practitioner. I am here to treat patients. Yes, you are, of course. And that is extremely important.
Yep.
However, you're not going to have a job and your team is going to be out of a job if you don't know what your overhead is.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Or let me put one more caveat. Unless you have someone else running the business, unless you have a spouse running the business, an office manager, a part-time CFO, if you have someone else doing that, then great. If you're part of a DSO or a DPO, then great. They run the business, you do the clinical work. But if you are a practitioner that also runs the business, you really only have to know like 5 to 7 numbers.
Yeah, because and those 5 to 7 numbers can really pull levers that can make a big difference. It's not to say that you can't dive deeper, but there's, you know, you got to start somewhere. I'll give you another one idea-wise, which is this. If you're a general dentist listening and you have a good relationship with, you know, one or more specialists, and you have a feeling that, you know, the specialist in your conversations with them is kind of similar from a data-oriented person, right? How powerful would it be as a general dentist who's into interdisciplinary dentistry, who refers implant cases to oral surgeons or periodontists? What would it be like to say to that specialist, hey, listen, I would really love to improve on my case acceptance. And so I'm a bit curious, how do my referred cases stack up against other docs that refer to you percentage-wise? How to, am I ahead of the curve, behind the curve? And if I'm behind the curve numerically, what are they doing that I'm not? How did their patients-
Let me ask a question on that.
Yeah.
Are you asking the specialist how many implants I refer a month? Are you asking them my patients that come to you, how many-
Yeah, it's more the latter. So hopefully your specialist has data relative to, they've seen 30 consults come in this month. Of those 30 consults, they came from Dr. A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Of the cases that came in, they were this, 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 and this case type.
Mm-hmm.
And how many of those were accepted from a case acceptance perspective? So if your specialist has a good idea of their data, they would be able to actually tell you, okay, great, you referred, you know, 36 implant cases, whether that's single or multiple, last year. Your case acceptance was 67.5%.
When you say your case acceptance, you're talking about the patients that accepted the case for the specialist.
To move forward with the case.
Okay.
Because what I will also say as a side note caveat, case acceptance always starts within the office from which it was referred.
Totally.
So if you say to your specialist, "In how do I stack up relative to the other people in my community?" Mm-hmm. You could simply start with, let's say, single implant cases.
Mm-hmm.
What's my case acceptance of the patients that I refer to you for single implants? Great. It's 67%. What is your case acceptance, Dr. Specialist, within the totality of your practice? Well, actually, it's 78.7%.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So we have a delta. So what are the doctors doing, Dr. Specialist, that have a higher case acceptance with you that I could learn from to increase our case acceptance, our ability to provide great dentistry, and drive greater levels of financial success within our respective practices? That would be powerful.
I love what you said about the case acceptance starts in the practice from which it came or whichever.
Yeah.
This was something that I always talked about, you know, when I was lecturing on implants mm-hmm. a lot.
Yeah.
If you're a general dentist and you're referring anything to a specialist,
mm-hmm.
it's your job to prepare the patient to know that other things may come about.
Amen.
Meaning, I'm going to send you to Dr. So-and-so. He or she is going to extract this tooth that, you know, is fractured. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do. However, it may include doing a bone graft. It may include a tissue graft. It may include a provisional of some type. It may include some special medication. Like,
yep.
You want to set that. You don't give them a treatment plan.
No.
You say, you know, I'm not really sure. He or she's the specialist at this. They do that all day, but there's some additional procedures that may have to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And why do I say this? Because if you just say, oh yeah, you're going to go to Dr. X and he or she's going to extract the tooth. And they go there and say, we're going to extract the tooth. And then, you know, we think you need a bone graft and a bone graft is $1,200. They're going, I'm getting upsold here. Like they told me you're going to extract the tooth, but this specialist, they just want to drive a new Ferrari and they, you know, think that they're going to charge me $1,200.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to remember as GPs, our patients know us. They know our staff. They see us every 6 months or every year, or every 3 months, every 4 months. They trust you. Even that small little area of setting that expectation on the time or the money or the expense or whatever it is will work wonders for your
Oh,
specialist,
yeah.
and your specialist will love you for it.
I just gave a presentation at the Spear Summit to study club leaders, and it was all about the patient-centric referral and the patient-centric club. And so I basically set the conversation. I was like, what's the single factor that drives practice success, both clinically and financially? And I told the group, I said, it's two words, and the first starts with a C. It's case acceptance. And so I actually showed them a study from our medical colleagues about how consistencies in communication about patients' condition between doctors and nurses increased the patient's belief that they were on the same page and confidence and willingness to move forward in treatment. That was pretty powerful. So I challenged the audience. I was like, so let me ask you this. How consistent is how you talk about implants between your office and your specialist office? Do you even know? Have you ever even talked about it? Why not? You know? And so, you know, there's a much longer discussion than we have time to go in here, but it was the idea around, if we want to drive case acceptance, we have to understand that there's this person in the middle called the patient, and we have to do everything we can to get them to feel comfortable to say yes. So why wouldn't we join forces, figure out what we're saying? I'm not saying you have to create scripts and say everything verbatim, but wouldn't it make sense to say similar things? Maybe even use similar educational tools, whether it's Spears Patient Education, CASEY, whatever the case may be. Why would you not do that if the goal of increasing case acceptance is important to you?
Yeah, and that goes back to this topic of today is case acceptance goes back to maybe having more time off, to making more money, to being able to treat your staff better, to taking them on, you know, dinners or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. The idea with referrals and case acceptance, especially on implants, is one that I think there's a big problem with. And it's because there's so many of these adjunct procedures that go along with an implant.
Yeah.
So an implant may involve a tooth extraction, a bone graft, a tissue graft, a sinus lift, a guide, a healing abutment, a provisional abutment, many different adjunct features that when we just say, I'm going to send you to Dr. So-and-so and he or she's going to place an implant on you. And then they say, well, I need a sinus lift. Wait, they're going to talk about my sinuses? What? This is tooth stuff. Why are they talking about my sinuses?
You just said something that I never considered before that just came to me out of the blue, which is this, the internet. And so what I mean by that is I had a relative that recently had some pretty extensive cosmetic surgery. And in talking, they were like, yeah, well, I went on, this is before surgery. I went on YouTube and, you know, they said this and this and this, but the doctor never mentioned it. And so what would it be like if actually your conversations between referred office and referring office were consistent? And because think about the concern that ends up being created by somebody going on YouTube and looking up a video about implants when it's not something you either mentioned or at least addressed between the two offices. Just a thought that never occurred to me before, right?
Well, this is a lot of what I teach when I talk about facial harmony and when I talk about implants is, as a general dentist, you are the leader. I know a lot of general dentists are afraid of their specialist colleagues. You know this, right?
Oh, oh my gosh,
well, I can't tell them what to do. They're the specialist, right? Well, no, you're the captain here.
Yeah.
They are a portion of your team. So you don't need to know how to do a sinus lift. You don't need to know how to take out wisdom teeth. What you need to know is the steps involved in it. You don't need to know how to do it. You need to know what's possible. You need to know some of the complications. You need to know, it's like with, you know, a lot of my research on the lip lift is you don't need to know how to do a plastic surgery procedure. What you need to know is how to refer it, what your plastic surgeon can do, and how that impacts the incisal edge for when you're doing a denture, veneers, composites, ortho.
Yeah, it's and so you bring up another point, which is this, which is something I've been talking about for years, What you just said about the restorative dentist versus the specialist is the exact same argument about your team understanding what it is you're doing versus you.
Great.
They don't need to understand how to prep a tooth, but they need to understand what it entails, et cetera. So that when the patient, when you leave the room, doc,
yes,
and the patient looks at the assistant and says, what do you think? They have the ability to have an answer, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've been talking about this for years relative to study clubs. Like if you're learning about something in a study club, you need to bring that back to your team, not with the intention that they're going to do it, but they have to understand it to be able to give the patient a cogent enough response that it doesn't sow the seeds of doubt. Right?
Yeah, it's that idea you just said brings me back to this idea of this episode today, which is making small steps to accomplish goals.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we did in our practice was we made a clinical playbook, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, especially my partner, Dr. Najad, he's very meticulous and really like a world leader on bonding and veneers and all this stuff. But if we get a new assistant, they may not know our specific bonding protocol. It's very complex. You know, the size of the air abrasion unit that we're using, and we etch for this long, we prime for this long, we do the light this many times, this many surfaces. We decided we need a playbook. We need a Wikipedia that our team can look up to find something.
Yep.
Even little stuff like how to schedule a new patient.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, our practice management system has some videos on it, but we wanted to literally have click by click instruction.
Nice.
Now,
nice.
This is a very big undertaking, as you can imagine.
Yep.
It took us about 2 years to do it.
Yeah. And that's okay.
But we had to do the thing where we said, okay, this week I'm going to do the first half of how to schedule a patient.
Exactly.
And so, and going back to what we talked about last time, we actually delegated some of this. So we had some of our front office team members said, hey, screenshot every step of what it takes to schedule a patient.
Yep.
And then we just oversaw that.
Sure.
So it took us a long time, but now we have this playbook that is very, very helpful.
Yep.
When we have a new team member and we say, hey, can you schedule Mrs. Jones for her next appointment? Mm-hmm. And he or she says, I haven't done that yet.
So yeah.
Search the Wikipedia for schedule patient. It'll come up. There's step-by-step instructions there. Let us know if you have any questions.
Yeah. And this extends to anything you want to do. So let's go back to the messy desk example. If you can sequester the piles into 4 piles, 5 piles, 8 piles, whatever it is, and you commit to just going through and eliminating 1 pile a week, one pile a day, whatever it is for you, holy smokes, within X period of time that you've defined, setting a deadline, you will have accomplished that and have a clean desk and have a better understanding of how not to allow it to get to that point again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I think this is a good topic.
Amen.
Something that dentists need. Everybody likes immediate satisfaction.
Sure.
You know, we like to check things off of lists. It's hard for us to set long-term goals.
Yeah.
But many of the goals that we want to set in our practices and in our lives don't happen in a day or a week or a month or even a year.
Correct.
And so if we want to do this, if you're listening and you're a dentist, you're a practicing dentist, and you're planning on practicing for another 10, 20, 40 years, maybe you're brand new out of practice and you've got 40 years ahead of you.
Yep.
You have to know that you have to do this sustainably.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at typical quote unquote success with dentists, you have a very high ramp, you're doing really well, but then you burn out a little bit and you come down. And then, okay, I'm going to kick some ass some more and I'm going to grind. And then you come down a little more. However, that person that is having sustainable success or having that compound interest of life or compound interest success, which I kind of like that idea, they start lower.
Yeah.
The angle of their slope isn't as high, but over time they actually finish higher.
Yep. Amen. Love that. Great.
All right.
Great.
Well, Any last words? Any last thoughts on this?
No, I just, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. And, you know, I really do believe something that was taught to me in my coaching program as a foundation principle, which is we are all exactly where we need to be, period. And you're a dentist or a dental professional. You've put in the time to get to where the point you are today. That's to be celebrated. Don't get frustrated by the fact that you feel you're not making enough progress on that next level, whatever that is for you. One step at a time, one foot in front of the other. A journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step, and you'll get there just like you've gotten to where you are today.
Yeah. And the last thing I would add would be only compare yourself to yourself.
Oh, amen. Amen.
Only compare yourself to yourself. Look at how far you've come.
Uh-huh.
Look at what you have now and talk to your 18-year-old self. And they would be like,
yeah.
What?
Exactly.
You really kicked some ass the last
totally.
You know, 10, 20
totally.
Years. Wow, I'm so proud of you.
Exactly.
So if today was helpful, make sure that you share this with a colleague. If you haven't written us a review, we would love to hear from you. This really helps us get this free content out to many more of your colleagues and helps more of our colleagues with stress and reducing overwhelm and anxiety and depression. And hopefully we're reducing a bunch of suicides as well. As you know, dentists are 17 times more likely to commit suicide. And this podcast is just one of the ways that Martin and I are trying to contribute to reducing that terrible statistic.
Yeah.
So write us a review, share this with a colleague, share this on your Instagram or your Facebook or your TikTok or anything like this. This really, really helps us. And make sure to go to Wellness and Dentistry, look up our course, Lightside Live, and join us in November. We'd love to spend 2 days with you. You've
yep.
gotten to know us by listening to our podcast. Come get to know us in person. Come out to dinner with us and let's have some fun.
Amen. Sounds good.
All right. All right. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.